drops straight back to throw. Steps up, gets hit by Canty. Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again, trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's a Thursday morning here at the Giants facility. We welcome you in. Phone number to get in on the show, you know it. Come on now. We're already heading into week 14. 201-939-4513. That's the phone number. Also, all things social media. As you know, you can follow us. Hopefully, you already are following us on social media at Giants. Any questions, comments for the show, you know how we make it happen here. Hashtag Giants Chat. Paul Dottino is all over Twitter. And he's monitoring your tweets and will share them throughout the show. So, Paul,
are you sure I'm here? Doesn't say it on your tweet. Just says it's you.
Well, there's only so many characters. You are a character, Paul Dottino.
Thanks, Nile.
Why are you so sensitive?
Oh.
You are so...
I'm having fun with you, that's
you,
all.
You are so... You're sensitive that I didn't include you in on the tweet.
That's all right. Not a big deal. I'm just having fun with you.
That's really funny. Again, 201-939-4513. I will say this. I hosted Big Blue Hits live yesterday. And
Pugh was good.
Justin Pugh, the rookie offensive lineman, was our guest. We were actually supposed to have Brandon Myers. He had to reschedule, so he's definitely going to be on with us next Wednesday. That's a definite. That's confirmed. But Pugh came in. To pinch hit, and he was fantastic. Just really a pleasure to talk to. He was really good on the show, and I think really contributed a lot. And I thought he was really great. This is my first chance to really talk to him. I haven't interviewed him much this season.
Good guy. The two things I thought about him when I first met him, and maybe you felt the same way, I don't know. Very pleasant, respectful, real good, straight-up guy. But the other thing is, he gets it. He understands that he's a pro now, and that there are things to learn, and that, you know, he is the new kid on the block, and he's supposed to soak it all in, and there's a lot of stuff he doesn't know. How many first-round picks do you know, or have you covered over the years, who come in, I'm a first-round pick. I'm entitled. I know everything. You don't have to show me the ropes. It's okay. I got it all. He's not like that at all. He is so down-to-earth, so humble, so willing to learn, an eager student who I think is going to have a good future here.
Yeah, I enjoyed the program probably more than the Giants fans who actually tuned in to the program. So yesterday, really no big news except, of course, the fact that Justin Tuck won NFC Defensive Player of the Week, and rightfully so, because his 4 sacks against the Washington Redskins, great, great game, his best game of the season.
Yeah, well, not just best game of the season, probably best game he's had in 3 years. You know, it's funny, he was talking to the media yesterday and said, well, you know, I don't know if it was my best game. I'm sure I could play better. I'm hoping to continue to play better. Hey, that's great. I appreciate that, but he should just pat himself on the back for what was a stellar performance against the Redskins the other night. It was really good to see him erupt like that because it was a Pro Bowl caliber game. And I don't know, you know, how many of those games he has left in him. I still think he's a good player, a solid player. I think he'll be back next year. I can say that now as we enter the final month of the season. I wasn't so sure at the beginning of the year. But what a performance the other night. He really got after it. Although, I'll be honest with you, Anita, seeing RG3 up close, and I was on the sidelines the entire night, he is just not the same. And everybody says that, but until you actually see it for yourself with your own eyes, I mean, it's sad, to be honest. It's sad.
Okay, and so
80%, 85%. He's not the same.
Okay, so do you in watching him? And again, you were on the sideline. during that Giants Washington Redskins game. In watching him, do you sense it's a physical thing? Do you feel it is because of his knee? Is it a mental thing because of all that he's been going through and the fact that him and obviously the Shanahan family, who's the head coach and the offensive coordinator, are not on the same page? What are you sensing? Is it a combination of both?
RG3 has lost some speed. He has lost some acceleration. He has lost some quickness. Physically, he is not, his legs are just not the same anymore. And I could tell you that because I was on the sideline in Washington last year when, you know, he ran around a lot with the against the Giants and he was using his legs. And it was almost like a blur, you know, when he went by you, when you were down there. It's not the same now. He's clearly less with his legs. And now, mentally, look, who knows where the guy is mentally. But here's the thing. If you watch him carefully, he still tries to do a lot of the same things he did last year, doesn't do them, and then he tries to keep going back to it. Instead of altering his game and understanding he's got to alter his game because maybe he can't do all the things that he used to do, he keeps trying to do the same stuff over and over and over again with his legs. And that's not good. It's not good. He's gonna get himself killed.
Now, as always, it's Thursday. What does that mean? Eric Kennedy joins us. He's owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. As always, again, every Thursday. And just to kind of get a sense of how the fans are feeling and what they're thinking about this upcoming matchup. So let's bring Eric in. Eric, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. On with Anita Marks and Paul Dottino. How you doing this morning?
Hi, Anita. Hi, Paul. How you guys doing?
Hey, how are you?
Well, doing well. I wish they'd won 2 weeks ago, but hanging in there.
Well, I mean, let me ask you that, and in the fact that, listen, we know the Giants are not out of it. So much has to go right in order for them to make it to the playoffs. So the percentage of that happening is, you know, probably one in a million, if not more. But what is the majority of talk on your site? Is it looking forward to the next few games, or is it looking forward to next season?
It's next season. I think there was a group of probably more realistic fans that knew that it was going to be tough, even if they had beaten Dallas because of the hole that they had dug. But there was a significant group that had, you know, the four-game win streak had lifted their hopes, and they saw that Dallas had slid back to the pack a little bit. And they knew that if the Giants had won this game, at least the last games would be more relevant. So they, as we talked about, I think a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, there was the danger. There was a group of fans who were saying they're going to pull us back in this again, and they're going to shatter our hopes again. And that's kind of what happened. I think there was an interview with Tom Coughlin with NBC before the game where he said that the loss kind of took the wind out of the Giants' sails for obvious reasons. And I think that loss took the wind out of a lot of Giants fan sales too, and it was nice for them to beat the Redskins, and there are a large group of fans that would like to see the Giants finish strong this year, but you know, they knew it for all intents and purposes that the season basically ended with the Dallas loss, and it's too bad because they had a chance obviously to win that game as well as the first Dallas game, but they just shot themselves in the foot again with the red zone issues and with the turnover that was returned for a touchdown. There were any number of things that could have gone their way that might have won that game, the defense holding at the end and that type of thing. But, you know, when you add it all up, I think the fans realized that they just weren't good enough this year, you know, that they had their shot and they blew it again. And so the focus really has been on what do they need to do next year to get better, to get back to the playoffs, because it's going to be 4 out of 5 years now, and the Super Bowls are great, but I find it amazing how that only carries so much weight now with fans. The memory of those, while they're great, with the cachet with fans, that quickly dissipates after a couple of seasons where you don't make the playoffs.
Hey, Eric, let me ask you this. I know, you know, San Diego's a long ways away in terms of that storyline with Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning. We had a couple of reporters this week at the facility who still want to make a big deal out of it, even though the Giants and Chargers have played, you know, since that time. Do you sense some of the Eli Manning critics who still get down on him despite his two Super Bowls who have perhaps rather have had Big Ben or Phillip Rivers or somebody else quarterbacking this team. I'll tell you right now, I think Eli's the right guy for this team, and I don't know that, Ben or Rivers would have won two Super Bowls as a Giant.
No, I don't see that. Specifically with those two quarterbacks, no, because I think, you know, there's the off-the-field issues with Ben that most Giants fans, you know, they say they don't want any part of that guy just because of he's not the classy guy that Eli is. And then with Phillip Rivers, he's a bit of a loose cannon, and I can't even imagine, and I don't think most Giants fans, based on what I've seen, can imagine what he would have done in this pressure-packed environment that is New York. I can't even imagine. And same with Ben, you know. So I haven't seen all that. The Eli discussions on the website really are still what is going on with him. That's what, you know, and it ranges from everything from it's not him, you know, being the offensive line. There are issues maybe with the receivers to there, it is him, but what's going? Why is it him? You know, is there something going on with him in terms of confidence? Is there something going on with coaching, because they've switched quarterback coaches, obviously, and the wide receivers coach changed. So there's been all this speculation and debate and discussion about what's getting. But it is the understanding, and no one's talking about replacing Eli at this point. But they want to know, and everyone knows that if they're going to get this thing right, they need to fix Eli, because if you look at the 2011 Giants and the 2012 and 2013 Giants, the big difference I think most fans realize are the impact players in 2011 aren't impact players in the last 2 years. Eli's not Eli of 2011. JPP hasn't been the same player since 2011. Hakeem Nicks hasn't been the same player, because the offensive line had issues back in 2011 too. The running game wasn't there that year. The defense actually may be a bit better this year overall because of the additions at linebacker, and the secondary seems to be holding up well. But it's the recognition that the Giants' elite players are not playing at the level that they had attained that year, and that's the big discussion, the big debate. How do we get Eli back to that level?
Again, Eric Kennedy joining us, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Eric, it's pretty interesting, you know, in talking to a number of the players here at the facility, and I think they're realistic in the fact that chances are they're not going to make it to the playoffs, but they want to continue to win. They want to continue to fight. They don't want to lay down. And a big reason for that is because they love Tom Coughlin. And I think some of them feel like if they do continue to play hard and they do continue to win, regardless of what the outcome is, they'll be saving Tom Coughlin's job. What's the talk of Tom Coughlin as the head coach of the Giants on your site?
That's a great question. It's the groups that always come under the most fire when the team loses, and this is probably true for any team, any sport, is the quarterback or the leader of the team, obviously, and the head coach. So Tom's under a lot of heat on the site, but I would say even more so, Kevin Gilbride's been getting a lot of criticism, and the level of criticism goes up and down for each unit depending on how the unit plays. Perry Fuel used to be the favorite target of criticism. That's kind of dissipated since his defense has been playing better. It's still there, and they're still looking for chinks in that armor, like when the defense couldn't hold in the Dallas game at the end. But right now, I would say that more people, there's a bigger group that would say, hey, we'd like to have Tom back, but he's got to make some changes on his staff. And then there's a group that says, you know, as long as Tom's here, he's not going to make those changes unless he's forced to do so. There's also concern, you know, there's a concern about Tom is 67 years old. If they are going to make some changes and rebuild this team, is he the right coach at this time to do that? Is he going to be, in other words, is he going to be, when he's 70 years old and maybe they're going to make another run, is he going to still want to coach when he's 70? That type of thing. So I think more of the concern has been there has been an anti-Coughlin, and you always see that. That'll rear its ugly head when people, because there's just some people that don't like the guy and they're just waiting for the opportunity to criticize him. But I think most fans respect what he's done, would like to see him go out a winner. There is this concern, though, is the coaching staff lost its edge, and maybe is there a change that needs to be made on the staff?
You know, Eric, there's only one thing I want to leave you with, and that's in terms of Tom Coughlin. I will assure you with 100% certainty, and every other fan that's out there listening to the program, that Tom Coughlin has as much energy as a guy 20 years younger. He
right.
is relentless. He is determined. He has tremendous pride. He has tremendous dedication. He has a responsibility to himself, to his own good name, to the Giants, to Wellington Mara, quite frankly, who really handpicked him to be the coach of this team, to have an undying dedication and devotion to working as hard as he possibly can to make this team a winner again. So anybody who thinks that he's, quote, too old or getting up there in age and can't handle it, I have to tell you, they are sadly, sadly miscalculating this man. And I mean that. I mean that. He is working probably harder this season than I've seen him work even in recent years, because that 0-6 start was killing him. And when I tell you he was badly beaten up, think about the personal tragedy he went through when he lost his brother in the middle of that losing streak, and yet he continued to push forward. I can't tell you the amount of respect that I have for this man as a coach. I can't even begin to describe it.
Well, he certainly has held it together, and they're still playing hard. The one thing that did come up with him this week that I think the media focused on for a little bit, but I still think is a bit of a mystery, was the Hakeem Nicks situation, where Hakeem said he was going to play before the game, and then after the game he said he could have played. And in a game of that magnitude, you know, there was discussion, even as a decoy, wouldn't he have been better out there than Jarrell Jernigan, who was thrown at 9 times and only had 2 completions, passes thrown in his direction. There is confusion still about, you know, was that the right – if Tom was trying to send a message, and that's what we don't know. If he was trying to send a message to Hakeem about him sitting out practice that week on advice of his agent, was that the right time to do it in the game of that magnitude or not? So, and again, that's pure speculation. We don't really know what was going on. We're taking the player's word for it, that he could have played. But it's certainly he was certainly missed in that lineup in that game because the passing game certainly didn't match the running game against a Dallas defense that was dead last the pass.
But so, Eric, let me say this, and this is difficult for me to say because, A, I own Hakeem Nicks in a number of my fantasy football leagues, and on top of that, I adore the kid because he's such a great guy. What has Hakeem Nicks done this season? I'll be honest with you. I don't have a problem with them putting in Jernigan to see can he bring something different? Can he bring another element? I don't have a problem with that because, unfortunately, Hakeem Nicks has not delivered for this offense all season long.
No, and I agree with you that he hasn't had that type of year, but I don't know. I still – the thought process is – wouldn't he still have drawn more coverage and more in from the Cowboys than Jarrell Jernigan did? Wouldn't he have demanded more respect, at least as somebody that they would at least have to pay attention to on the field? Because the Cowboys did a fantastic job on Cruz, and Cruz really was taken out of that game.
Eric, you know what? Honestly, there are probably about 1,500 different things that a coach has to manage during the course of the week, and no mm-hmm. one is going to agree with every single one of them. And so, to be honest, if that's that's the one thing that people didn't like that he did that week, you know what I'm saying?
Oh no, there were other things. They wanted him to run the ball more and stuff. But I'm just bringing up the sense that again, it seems a curious move in the biggest game of the year that they sat Hakeem then. If Hakeem couldn't play, that's fine. But Hakeem says,
Eric,
he could play.
I'm only going to tell you this: there are some things that a lot of people don't know about that go on behind closed doors, and probably are better not to know. And I think that's the toughest thing sometimes as fans, and even as media people, we look at an equation and we think 2 + 2 = 4, but in reality, it's actually 2 + 3 behind closed doors.
But
it doesn't matter that you want to know. You're not supposed to know. Some things have to stay behind closed doors, and sometimes the mathematics add up a little bit differently.
And I agree with you 100%, and I think everyone has a sense that there is something going on that we don't know about. But it's odd to us that the press hasn't pushed that. And maybe it's good because you don't want the press to sometimes create controversy and create distractions. But again, from a fan perspective, you know, it leaves us scratching our head. You know, what's going on? It's curiosity. People want to know what's going on. So,
Eric, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Always a pleasure having you on, sir.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive. Make sure you check out his site. A few things that I want to comment on the discussion we just had with Eric. And I know I'm going to date myself here, and I apologize. I'll probably be really embarrassed when I'm done saying this. But I've covered a number of teams for several years. I started, when I got into this business, Don Shula was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. So
wasn't he with the Colts then?
Wow, Paul, I think you want to stay really far away from me today.
Yeah.
And then, you know, went from, of course, Don Shula to Jimmy Johnson to Dave Wannstedt to Nick Saban, then made my way to Baltimore with Brian Billick, and then the switch over to John Harbaugh, and then now I've been here with the Giants for 4 years. And I can say this in all honesty, and I'm not just saying this because I'm here and I work with the Giants now, and that is that I think Tom Coughlin is the best coach I've ever covered. And that says a lot considering that the number of games that Don Shula had won. Granted, when I started covering him, it was towards the end of his tenure, and he was about done with his coaching job with the Miami Dolphins. And, of course, as I said, Jimmy Johnson took over at that point. But just on how coaches operate, on the respect that they get from their players, on the day-to-day interaction, on it's interesting because obviously, and I wouldn't expect anything more, but because fans don't cover teams and don't know the intricacies of how an organization works, they just focus on the Tom Coughlin that's on the sideline that gets really red when stuff goes bad. And he's up and down the sidelines, and he's yelling at this player, or he's patting this player on the butt, and you know, but a coach's responsibility far exceeds what goes on the sideline. Okay, Tom Coughlin. Granted, yes, all due respect to the Mara family and the Tisch family and Jerry Reese, but the atmosphere that exists here at this facility has a lot to do with Tom Coughlin. Mm-hmm. He has his finger on the pulse of everything here. His attitude, the way that he handles things, the way he crosses his T's, he dots his I's. It's just, it's an organization's feel and vibe comes from a head coach. And I can say that because, again, 10 years with the Miami Dolphins, 4 years with the Ravens, I can tell you that. And I honestly don't feel that there's a better coach that I've covered than head coach Tom Coughlin. Honestly.
And, you know, for me, he's right up there on a par with Bill Parcells. So do I really need to explain that any further? You know what I mean?
And in regard to Hakeem Nicks, as I said to Eric, you know, there's nothing weird going on here. Listen, Hakeem Nicks is not playing well this season. He is struggling. He is not creating separation with the corners and the DBs that are playing him. He's lost some speed. He's lost a step. You know, also, you can't deny that the way that this offense struggled early on, Eli Manning is not the same. I mean, his cage has been rattled because the offensive line was not giving him a lot of protection early on. So that had a little something to do with it. So, you know, I don't think there's anything weird and crazy going on here when it comes to Hakeem Nicks. He's just not playing well. And so the team wanted to see if Jernigan could add a little something that Hakeem Nicks could not. And I'm sure that was a hit to the ego. The fact that it is a contract year, you know, whether he had an oblique situation or not, maybe he knew that he was going to get benched, and he just, you know, that's kind of embarrassing. You're talking about a legitimate number one wide receiver in the NFL getting benched. It's just... You know, that's a big hit to the ego, and considering that he's looking, this very well could be his last payday. You know, I'm sure he wanted to make it seem as if it was more of an injury than anything else.
Well, Neil, the answer is really simple. I mean, if the coach believes that a particular player, for whatever reason, is not fully prepared to help the team win on Sunday, he certainly has the right to pull that guy out of the lineup. And whatever that reason was, physical, mental, emotional, whatever that reason is, we don't need to know what it is. if we just have to believe that the coach has made the proper decision, and that if he says the guy's not 100% ready to play and help, that's got to be enough.
Again, 201-939-4513. Enough of us chatting. Let's head out to our phone lines and find out what Big Blue Nation Giants fans feel about the Giants moving forward. They're going to be heading out west to take on the San Diego Chargers this coming Sunday. Let's kick it off with James in Maryland. James, welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing? I had to get back on because yesterday I got cut off. But I guess real quick, a couple questions. First question is, do we own the tiebreaker with the Eagles? I'm guessing no. And my second point
is... Well, time out. Before you go to your second point, because Paul and I sat and we broke this down yesterday. And the Eagles, at the end of the day, the Eagles would who would have the better division record? Paul.
Okay. Yeah, and it seems to me that Philadelphia is going to if they wind up in a tie with the Giants. I'm thinking that unless they have a total collapse and lose three games, I don't see how the Giants pass them.
Okay.
I just don't see it because we counted on Philly having potentially two division losses and the Giants having three.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they play the Lions, yeah. Vikings, Bears, and Cowboys. That's one division game left.
Yeah.
So,
and what's their division record? The Philly.
Well, they've got two losses in the division now. The Giants have three.
Okay, so yeah, basically, if they lose the Cowboy game at the end of the season.
Yeah, but then the Cowboys own the tiebreaker over the Giants. You see, because they swept the Giants.
Yeah,
so that you don't want that either.
You know what that is, so we're screwed either way.
What you got to have here is for the Giants to win out and go 9-7, and you really need the Eagles and the Cowboys both to wind up falling on their faces and going 8-8. If that happens, the Giants get in. How about that?
Yeah, how about that? My second point, and I agree with you, Anita, on Hakeem Nicks. I'm totally surprised by the whole ordeal because I had him on my fantasy team. Lucky he didn't screw me in the playoffs, but I just think that do you think that we can get another wide receiver like Andre Johnson? I don't know if his contract is out. He might be too expensive. Or somebody else that could, you know, obviously get that separation that we need going forward.
Well, we talked about James Jones at one point in time on the show. But what do you think about Andre Johnson, Paul?
Somebody mentioned that to me the other day, not related to the front office here. And, you know, he's making, I think, in excess of $12 million a year for the next 2 years. In each of those next 2 years. So I don't see the Giants making any kind of deal for him. Now, if he gets caught and he's a free agent on the street as a salary cap casualty, well, perhaps he might be something they'd want to take a look at. I kind of like Jones better, but Andre Johnson's a quality receiver. I mean, you could certainly do a lot worse than bringing him in, again, if he should be released by the Texans, which apparently he's very unhappy there, and obviously they're not winning, and I'm sure that they're going to be looking to get out from under that salary. So I think that's possible. He would be a guy you'd want to look at. But, you know, again, there's still a lot between now and free agency.
Let's go to Mark in New Jersey. Mark, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Okay.
I just want to discuss, obviously, you know, a lot of people are talking about the possibility of making playoffs. It's definitely going to be hard. At this point, I'd rather see them just focus on getting better personnel because the offensive line has not been the best at all this year compared to other years. And I know, Paul, you discussed possibly moving Justin Pugh to the right guard position eventually.
That's what I'd like to do, yeah. If they could get a stud tackle, it would seems to me that's the best way to go.
What do you think of Michael Orr coming in as a right tackle since he's a free agent this year and then maybe just trying to find a replacement for William Beatty, who really has not lived up to his contract? I called in last year saying they should have spent that money on a Jake Long-type guy who's a stud offensive lineman, and they decided to keep Beatty even though they got the same money. And another solution to the wide receiver situation, if they do get rid of Nicks, is why not bring in a veteran like Anquan Boldin or even bring back Mario Manningham, who has been with the team before and has seen success?
Well, I don't know about been there, done that with Manningham. Remember, he's coming off of ACL surgery, and even though he's playing with the 49ers this year, I can't tell you. I haven't watched him every day, so I don't know if he's nearly the same player that he once was. So that becomes a little sticky there. Then the other thing is, you're talking about Orr. Look, Anita, you may know a little bit more about the Ravens linemen than I do, but, you know, it seems to me you're probably better off trying to build your offensive line through the draft than you are trying to go out and sign somebody. A, because you're going to overpay when you grab a veteran offensive lineman of any quality. And B, he's going to have mileage on him, which then you run into that whole injury thing. How durable is he going to be? You see, to me, you want to be able to draft young stud offensive linemen who you can groom from the beginning and say, look, I want this guy to be here for 8 years, 10 years, much like they did with Snead and Deal and Justin Pugh and hopefully what happens with Beatty. That's what you want on your offensive line. You don't want a lot of retreads. When you overpay for a veteran offensive lineman who has a lot of wear and tear on his tires, you get a David Boss situation. Do you really want to go through that again?
Not really. And the only other thing I'd like to bring up is I would really like to see them bring back Peyton Hillis as maybe a backup with Wilson and Brown, because he has done phenomenal when he's been put in the game, except for that one fumble. And he just brings a different look that, you know, he's a bruiser, which I know Brendan Jacobs is too, but Jacobs is on the sideline a lot, and he seems to be more durable at this point. So I would like to see them bring back Peyton Hillis.
Well, I don't think Brandon Jacobs is going to be coming back next year. He came back here as a last hurrah because he didn't want to retire as a 49er and go out on the bench. So I don't think you have to deal with a Hillis or Jacobs equation. Peyton Hillis, there's a chance he comes back next year to compete, but I think the Giants signed him as a stopgap to just try to help themselves for this year. I don't think they signed him as a guy they think of as the future.
I actually like Peyton Hillis. You know, I feel like we haven't really seen a lot of him. You and I both know how difficult it is to come into this organization and learn the offense immediately. When a player has to mentally think about so much as a play is happening, as it's being called in the huddle, it's hard for them to really execute and show their athleticism. It's going to take some time. But I think we both know that Brandon Jacobs, after this season, is done.
Right.
And I would love to see them hold on to Peyton Hillis, give him an opportunity to come in here at camp.
Sure.
And compete for maybe, you know, a backup job to Andre Brown or a complimentary back. I would love to see Peyton Hillis stay here. And on top of that, I think he's just a really nice guy.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And quite honestly,
although he calls me ma'am all the time.
Well, I've done that a few times, too.
Yeah,
he'll smack me.
I don't like that.
John Connor and Henry Hinoski, I believe, should both be in training camp next year and compete and fight it out and may the best fullback win. You know, competition's supposed to make guys better. Right. Let them fight it out. You know, let them fight it out.
Okay. I mean, if you really want to go here right now, I'd rather them keep both of them.
Don't know if they can. They may not be. Usually there's not room for two pure fullbacks on a roster, especially if they're trying to, you know, add running backs on the other side, figuring that you don't know
that,
about Brown's durability. Bottom line is, I'd like to see Connor and Hinoski here in the summertime of 2014 and let the whole thing sort itself out then. But I'd like to see them both get a shot.
Let's continue with your calls. We go to Zaid. Zed? Okay. Zed. Zaid, welcome.
Hi, how are you guys?
What's your question?
I have two questions, actually. My first question was, I read online that we're going to be short on corners for the for San Diego game. And right now, as of I know, all we have is Charlie James, Jaron Hosley, and Pritchard. I'm looking at who else do we have in corner besides them three?
You're talking about the Giants' corners, right? And you're asking me what? They've got Prince, they've got Hosley. They're hoping that McBride's going to be able to go. Now, he was limited in practice by a groin yesterday, but they're hoping that he's going to be able to go.
I read that he's inactive online. I read that.
Who's telling you he's inactive? The game's not until Sunday. How do you know that?
Yeah, I know. The Giants tweeted it.
No, he was limited at practice yesterday. If you saw anything online, that's what it was telling you. He was limited at practice. We don't know if he's going to be able to play on Sunday or not. And, of course, they've got Terrell Thomas, who takes Thursday off. Not Thursday. He takes one day off every week. It's usually Wednesday or Thursday to rest his knee. So don't be in a panic, you know, if Terrell Thomas shows up on the injury report. That's maintenance for him. So they've got guys, the same guys they had last week.
I heard they're inactive, that's fine. But I hope, yeah. Because I don't see Charlie James playing third string at all.
All right. Well, look, thanks for the call. He mentions Charles James. He's the very small, short, rookie, undrafted free agent the Giants brought in this year, who really had a nice camp. And as you remember, or may not, he was my dark horse of the street free agents to make this team. He did make the practice squad a few weeks ago, got elevated then to the regular squad, and has made some nice tackles on special teams, but has not been involved at all in the regular defense to this point.
Let's continue with our calls. We have Maurice calling in from Montclair. Maurice, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. In regards to the offensive line conversation a few callers ago, is it a possibility that we keep Booth at center because it seems like he can play multiple positions on the offensive line and go plug in someone else from the free agency in his old position?
Well, Anita and I are both big fans of Kevin Booth. And I want him on this team next year. He was signed to a one-year contract during the offseason. I'd like to see them bring him back, if for no other reason because of his versatility. But I think if the Giants can't go out and get two studs that can compete for starting jobs along the offensive line, I suppose that Kevin Booth will have a starting job then, either as a left guard or as a center. Personally, oh, bear with me a second here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get a new starting right tackle, move Pugh to right guard, and then I want to go out and I want to get a new starting center as well. I'd like to get two stud linemen in the first three rounds of the draft. It's not unheard of to have two high draft picks starting on an offensive line in a given season. It's been done before.
Have you emailed Jerry Reese about this?
Well, you know, I think he's got some other things going right now.
Okay.
But that's what I'd like to do. Short of getting that second lineman, I may need Booth to be the starting center again next year. That could happen. I may have to put him there. But that's what I'd like to do.
All right.
Okay,
I think he had another question, right?
Yeah. And last, I was just wondering about the game on Sunday. Is there going to be some favorable matchups on the outsides with our receivers to possibly make some big plays? I know we've been talking about it a lot. It hasn't really came to flourishing, but I'm just wondering if there's going to be some matchups out there. Do they have any, like, rookie guys or their veteran secondary? I really don't know too much about them.
They're in the bottom four. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
No, it's okay. I was just wondering about the running game and if we can also, you know, keep that going and ripping off some good runs against them.
Well, they're giving up almost 5 yards a carry, 4.9 yards per carry, which is 31st in the NFL. So clearly they are very susceptible to the run. Their secondaries in the bottom six, I believe, in the NFL also. None of their defensive backs are taller than 5'11". Okay, usually you have at least one six-footer back there, if not a corner, a safety. But this is a small secondary. It's also a very poor tackling team on defense as well. So that's basically the answer to your question. Yeah, should the Giants' offense have a lot of chances to make plays? Yes. They absolutely should. So now it's up to them to execute. Appreciate the phone call. Anita, if I may, Mate Teo is playing middle linebacker after some injuries earlier this year for the Chargers.
Right.
Fans will remember how I did not want the Giants to touch him during the draft back in the spring. Don't want to say I told you so, but I'm going to say it. This is a guy who, as far as I'm concerned, you do not want to build an NFL defense around. The Chargers at this point are throwing him in there. They have to. He's a high draft pick. They got to use him. They got to give him a shot. It'll take a couple of years to really give him a fair grade, but so far things not working out so good for the former Notre Dame player.
Again, 201-939-4513. It's around 10:15. We're with you till 10:30, just to kind of give you an idea of what takes place here at the facility today. The players start practicing at what time, Paul? 11?
I got to check it, believe it or not, because I'm just...
Oh, come on. This is week 14.
I know.
We should know this by now. What's going on here?
Okay. 11:55 to 1:45.
So players practice starting at 11:55, and then after practice, head coach Tom Coughlin will make himself available to the media as well as the players in the locker room following.
Till 2:35.
Talk to them a little bit more about their matchup against the San Diego Chargers, and then later on this afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, you can tune in to Big Blue Hits Live. Paul Dottino will be hosting with Robin Oben, and I will pop on board to give you a little fantasy football.
If I let you. I may not let you today.
Okay. Why?
I don't know.
That's hey, I could go home early and get in the gym. That's
of course you can. Of course you'd be on the
No,
program.
That's fine. Hey, if I could get home early, it's all good.
I don't know. I just sent you giving me a hard time today. That's all.
How am I giving you a hard time?
I don't know. I sent you that you are.
Am I giving him a hard time today?
I don't know.
I don't think I am. I'm sitting here looking at my fantasy football rosters. How am I giving you a hard time?
The truth is, I've barely slept and I'm a little delirious. You're going to have to bear with me.
Yeah, because I really...
I'm just a little out of it today.
I really am not giving you a hard time.
Okay.
Let's go to Lynn in Columbia. Lynn, welcome.
Oh.
Save the show. Save the show, Lynn. Save the show.
How you guys doing?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. Listen,
were you at the game? I didn't see you, by the way.
Yes, I was at the game, and one of my comments was going to be, there's nothing better than a victory over a division rival, and walking out of the stadium after that win, it's something about, it's just a great feeling when you beat a division rival. Of course, it's always good to win, but, living down here in Redskin territory, it's even better when you're walking out of their stadium after having beat them.
Let me digress for 1 second, because you were at the game, and obviously when the Redskins scored their first two touchdowns and they played that stupid Redskins song, which I cannot stand, nor can I stand the damn Eagles song when the Eagles score in Philadelphia. I don't know. How many other stadiums have you been at, Anita, where the home team plays a stupid song after a touchdown?
The Miami Dolphins.
Do they?
We move the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami. Come on.
They do.
Yeah, I've been singing that song since I was five.
College game, great. NFL game?
No, that's the song, man. The song.
If that keeps you young, I'm all for it.
Okay.
All right. Go, Lynn. I'm sorry. But you know that song made you sick, right?
That's a good question, and it reminded me of the old line from John McKay, the ex-USC coach, who talked about flying in the South Bend to play Notre Dame, when he said, you hear that song flying in? You hear that song when you get off the plane? You hear the song all night? You hear it during the game? And on the way home, your team's singing the song. And I guess that's a little bit away with the Redskins song. Well, great tradition, Paul. But I, as a Giants fan, I know exactly what you mean about hearing that song over and over again. Listen, Anita, I heard your interview last week quite by accident. I was flipping stations on my radio, my sports talk stations on my radio, and I heard your interview with Doc Walker last week. I think it was Wednesday. You did a good job.
Oh, thank
that
you.
Was nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I know Doc and B. Mitch pretty well. They're fun guys.
Yes, they are, and they do a nice job on their sports talk radio show here in the afternoon. Let me ask you about Jaquan Williams and Paysinger. It seemed to me this week that Paysinger got a few more snaps from scrimmage, more than just a few more. Probably as many as Jaquan got. Did that have something to do with the Giants' attempts to shut down the run and the thought that maybe Paysinger plays the run a little better than Williams does?
Len, you're very astute. That's exactly what happened. For the first time in several weeks, Paysinger and Williams split snaps. In fact, I think Paysinger did have just a few more than Jaquan did, because in the I don't want to say winning streak, but during the winning role, Jaquan had been getting mostly all of those snaps. But it was a matchup. It was a matchup issue. And they thought that this would be the way to go. And I thought both guys actually played well in their roles.
Yes, they did. I wasn't, I didn't think one person didn't play well. It was kind of an interesting, all of a sudden, first play from scrimmage, Paysinger was on the field. And, of course, my first thought was, geez, I hope there isn't something wrong with Jaquan. I tell you, when you see Jaquan on the field, you see it live, geez, he's not very big.
He's quick, though.
He's just not a real big guy. Hey, Paul, when you ran down the, the Chargers record and all their stats and so forth, I mean, it made it sound like scoring 40 points is going to be quite easy. But as you know, as we've gone through this year, you know, it just doesn't seem to be happening. I know it's probably a combination of things, but can you put some, is there one thing that we can begin to, after 12 games, put it at the top of the list as the reason why this offense seems to be kind of staggering along?
Len,
again,
ultimately,
a combination.
It is a combination, but Len, ultimately, if you had to pick one thing of all the various elements of this offense that have struggled or been responsible for the demise of this offense, it still has to go to the offensive line. Because even though it's improved over the second half of the season, at best, it is adequate. And you need a better than adequate offensive line if you truly want to be one of the top teams in the league. It's just that simple.
Now, let me see if I can add something to that, Paul. I'm not trying to do one-upsmanship here with you, but boy, Sunday night that was not a good performance by the offensive line.
Agreed.
I mean, even on Eli's interception,
pressure from the front of the pocket.
You could see, almost like he threw a dart.
I know,
because he was under so much pressure.
He could not step into the throw. He short-armed it, half-stepped it. And it was awry, and that goes on Eli, and it was a bad throw by him. But yes, there were collateral circumstances once again, and that's Len. Come on, you know the game well enough to know it starts in the trenches.
Yeah. And some of the guys who I've had confidence in just don't seem to be getting it done. They just don't seem to be getting it done. I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't want to say we're stuck with Beatty, but Beatty and Pugh are going to be the tackles.
Look, Beatty had a really good year last season. Then he got his big contract, and then yesterday was telling the media that he thinks he's pressing. He thinks that he's trying to live up to the hype and live up to the big numbers, and he thinks he's trying to do too much. And as a result, he's gotten sloppy with his mechanics. I understand that. I don't think it's a great excuse, but he better buckle down because the Giants have paid him a lot of money to be the left tackle on this team, and he's going to be here for a few years, and he's going to have to make sure he gets the job done. There are not going to be any acceptable excuses out of this guy.
Well, it is the second time within the last 3 to 4 weeks.
I know. It's been a bad year.
He's given us excuses, Paul.
I understand.
I mean, the guy has just got to play better.
It has not been a good year for him, and he's going to have to rebound.
Now, listen, if we're going to get on a plane and go 3,000 miles to play a football game, let's go out there and win this game. And I think that's doable. And, start moving ourselves toward 8-8, maybe even 9-7, and salvage something out of it. Hopefully it's the playoffs, but it gets more and more remote as time goes on. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Always good to talk to you.
Lynn. Thank you. Lynn, thank you very much. Lynn calling in from Columbia, as he does every week. 201-939-4513. We've got about 8 minutes left in the show. We do have to power down at 10:30 because a lot going on here at the facility this afternoon. But we're going to continue to try to get everybody's calls in. Let's go to D.C. We have Steve.
Go ahead. That's right. Hey, I have one question for you after we're done with the call. Go ahead. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. Paul, Nita, thanks for taking my call. Listen, you know, Len kind of stole my thunder because that's what I wanted to talk about right after, you know, Paul brought up the linebackers. You know, I kind of feel like we need to go a different direction with Jaquan myself. You know, I'm just really not happy with his play at all. So I was actually happy to see Kaye Singer in there a little bit more, but I think we definitely, you know, so my question, I have two questions if I could real quick, and I'll be happy to listen off air. You know, the second question, Paul, I hope you know, you can get a little rest when you get home and you don't take this one personally, but I do have a question, comment. But my first thing would be I think we need to address the linebacker position. I think we can all agree John Beeson has been a blessing, you know. So hopefully he can continue to stay healthy and we can sign him long term or, you know, at least get him under a 3-year contract. But I was thinking, you know, do you think we should go in the draft? First of all, do you think we need more linebackers and should we go to the draft or should we look for a veteran linebacker? That would be my first question. I don't know if you want to answer now. And my other question, I just basically want to make a comment because, you know, there's no secret on this show. I'm definitely a Hakeem Nicks advocate as far as, you know, I think he should be on this team. I'm not, you know, I can clearly see that, you know, it's been a bad year for the whole offense as a whole. And I just want to remind people that, first of all, that fight we've seen him with on D'Angelo, I think it was D'Angelo Hall, where he recovered that ball, that is somebody who wants to be a Giant and wants to have success here. I don't know exactly what happened with him and the coach, but I do know one thing, and his game has never been, you know, predicated on a lot of distance. So Eli doesn't have the time he has. You know, Nix is not being thrown to a whole lot. He has been open. And the fact of the matter is he's a receiver who was a physical receiver. He attacks the ball when it's in play, and he, you know, and he's in 9 times out of 10, he's going to be the one who gets that ball. So I just want to remind people that he's never been a speed demon. And, I don't agree with all this talk about how he's struggling. He's this, that, and he had the offense is a whole struggling. So I just want to hear your comments on the linebacker, and I'm sure you have a lot to say about the Hakeem Nix thing, but I strongly disagree, and it kind of bothers me to hear people say that because it's clearly Eli's not confident throwing the ball downfield where Hakeem Nix is going to be. So maybe we need to make changes in the offensive play calling, and I think that's the direction we really should be focusing on, which a lot of people agree with, which is Kevin Gilbride. So I'll listen to the call. Your comments off air. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I need a cute hat you had on the interview with Pew. And Paul, you get some sleep. Hey, you got. And oh, last thing is this: Beattie did not make excuses. And that was the first thing he said. No excuse. He said he was been trying to work on and change his technique in the middle of the season. So he didn't make excuses. I think we'll see better play. I'm hoping to see better play, but we can all agree he definitely needs to step it up. So thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a great one.
All right, Steve. Thank you so much. Steve liked my hat.
So did I.
Well, I was actually told right before the show that I was supposed to take my hat off, and I was like, you can't tell me to take my hat off now. Like, I've got hat head.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, the big wig here who's our boss. Yeah. Our boss man didn't like the hat. And I was like, What do you mean? I've gotten a ton of compliments on the hat. Like why shouldn't I wear it on the show? It's just it's different. It's a change of pace. I'm not gonna wear it today, but you know, just I thought I'd mix it up a little bit.
I will tell you, I think it works better today with today's outfit than yesterday's because of the gray.
I was wearing gray pants
yesterday.
Yeah, but
that with the stockings and stuff. It just, I don't know. It just looks better with the darker gray. The gray pants you had on yesterday were lighter. It goes better with the darker. I like it better today, is what I'm telling you. Not that it was bad yesterday, but I like it better today.
Well, I'm not going to wear it 2 days in a row. I might get fired.
I get that.
Okay.
But I like the dress today, too.
But Steve, hey. I do appreciate the compliment. Thank you very much. I dig the hat, too.
And he also asked us about the Hakeem linebackers
Nix.
And Hakeem Nix.
Hakeem Nix.
Okay. Linebackers, they've gone through a litany of linebackers here, draft-wise and free agent-wise, and for the most part not had a lot of success. So I'm just after getting anybody who's any good because they have thrown a lot of mud against the wall and a lot of it has not stuck. Finally, they've got a guy, though, in John Beeson, and I hope that they're able to re-sign him. I think that they will be able to. I'd still prefer to get a linebacker in the draft as opposed to a retread, if possible. Hakeem Nix. We've talked about him forever, Anita, and I don't know that there's anything more that we could possibly add at this point. I think the season's going to have to play itself out, and we will see how this all resolves itself. In answer to his question about targets, Hakeem Nix has been targeted 78 times this season, which is second on the Giants to Cruz's 109. Nix is averaging 15 yards a catch. That's a good average. I don't have a problem with that. But, again, he hasn't gotten into the end zone. He is a playmaker. He's never been a speed demon, but he's been a playmaker. He's always been athletic. He's always had deceptive quickness and always had very good moves. As soon as he caught the ball, he was always able to juke guys and be able to get extra yardage after the catch. We just don't see that out of him very much anymore. So I beg to differ with Steve. I don't think anyone who's watched Hakeem Nix would say he's quite the same player. Steve wants to believe that. Look, Steve, you're a good guy. I just don't know that I agree with you on that one. And then I guess the other question that I really wanted to ask you before we went to Steve was I wanted to go back.
Oh, wait. Linebackers.
We mentioned that.
Okay.
I said draft. I'd rather draft.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you, and it's pertinent to the caller before when we were talking to Len about the offensive line. You said that you have been through three NFL organizations now. Would you not agree that usually whenever any of those teams on any of those three organizations have had a subpar year, the one common thing that you would find was that the offensive line was subpar. I don't think you've ever gone through a season with a team that did not do well, and you could say, oh, but the offensive line was terrific. That's usually tied together, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, that's why you have that phrase, it's one in the trenches.
Right.
You know, there's a reason why that phrase has been around football forever and a day.
I've never seen one.
There's such truth to that.
There really is. And a lot of people still don't believe that. They still think you got to have the flashy running back and the flashy quarterback and the flashy wide receiver. But, Anita, it's proven time and time again. If you don't have the big horses up front, why do you think the Cowboys haven't won in so long? Jerry Jones used to have two and three Pro Bowlers every year on that offensive line when the Cowboys were in their heyday some years ago. He got away from doing that. They haven't had two Pro Bowl guys on that Dallas offensive line in years. It's the reason that they don't do anything in the postseason or can't even get there.
All right, so we've had a fun hour with you. Hopefully you've enjoyed my Miami Dolphin fight song. I'm going to leave you.
You did a good job with that, by the way.
I'm going to leave you with this.
Yes, please.
Because tonight, fantasy football, the fantasy football playoffs start tonight. Are you aware of that? Week 14. Week 14 and week 15 are fantasy football playoffs, and then week 16 typically is the championship. And the reason being is because typically week 17, there's the chance that there are a few teams that have already clinched whatever they can clinch, and they're going to bench some guys. So that's why the championship is in 16.
You told me that a couple of weeks ago. You explained to me why that is. But, Folks, if you haven't looked on Anita's Twitter, you said something to the effect that 10 out of your 12 teams are playoff teams. Is that right?
Yeah, 10. I played in 12 fantasy leagues. 10 of them advanced to this is pretty interesting. I do play in 12, but keep in mind, part of it is because I'm a fantasy football freak, but part of it is my job. I've been playing in these leagues for over a decade, and it's hard for me to kind of back out when you've been part of a group and you've established such great friends throughout the years. But neither here nor there. Yes, I play in 12. I advanced in the playoffs in 10 of the 12. Two of the 10, I made it. I was the number one seed, so I have a first round bye. Four of the 10, I just snuck in by winning in week 13. So I'm a sixth seed in four of the 10. And then the other four, I'm a fourth seed. So I have four fourth seeds, I have four sixth seeds, and I have two first seeds. Now, get this. The two leagues that I did not advance, I finished dead last. I went 3-10. In those two leagues, I drafted on Yahoo, which I'm going to do some research here. Obviously, if you play fantasy football, you know you have the choice of hosting your fantasy football league on Yahoo, NFL.com, CBSSports.com, or ESPN.com.
Right.
I find it interesting that the two leagues that I finished dead last in were part of Yahoo. I think it has something to do with the way that their draft board was and how their players were ranked and how easy or how difficult it was to find some players. I'm going to do some research in the offseason. Anyway, but beyond that, the players that I had on these two teams, C.J. Spiller, Steven Jackson, Matty Ice, Larry Fitzgerald, Andre Johnson, Hakeem Nicks, Ray Rice, Jared Cook, who I thought was going to have a monster year this year. Just to kind of give you an idea of some of the guys that I really targeted, who I thought were going to have big years, and they did not. So in those two leagues, I finished 3-10. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. In all 12 of my leagues, every person who owned Peyton Manning made it to the playoffs. And out of those 12, 7 of them got a first-round bye. They finished as the number one team. That's how important Peyton Manning was to fantasy football this year. And so my question on Twitter was, considering that, knowing that probably everywhere in the world, people who played fantasy football, who owned Peyton Manning, made it to the playoffs, let alone over 50% of them probably won their league as the number one seed and will get a first round bye in week 14, will Peyton Manning be the number one pick in fantasy football next year? And it's a very interesting question because you've got to think of age, one more year, this and that. For me, how can with that much power and that much influence on somebody's team advancing and making it to the postseason in fantasy football,
don't you have to take him?
How can you not take him in the first round next year?
Yeah, I would probably do that.
So anyway, I kind of shared that on Twitter last night. I thought it was pretty interesting stats.
At the expense of belaboring this, is there a second player behind Peyton who finished the regular season with a high total who was close?
No, but I was looking for like common players in all the leagues that did well, that helped. Eddie Lacy really helped folks do well. Matt Forte, Jamal Charles is a guy that predominantly is owned in a number
of
leagues.
How about Victor Cruz? No?
No.
No? Because he didn't have a lot of touchdowns.
No.
Right? That was a killer for him. He hasn't had a lot of scores this year.
And I will say this. I went out and I drafted Josh Gordon in the sixth round of my fantasy football league, majority of them, knowing that he was going to be benched for the first 4 weeks. And also, I went out and I drafted Alshon Jeffrey like in the 14th or 15th round of my fantasy football because I anticipated him to have a big year. Both Alshon Jeffrey and Josh Gordon put up over 40 fantasy football points last week. Those two guys alone helped me advance and win week 13 so that I made it as the sixth seed in four of my leagues.
Folks, you don't know her like I know her, but relentless, tireless, and I'm telling you. No, but this is typical.
I have
typical.
No life. This is
but this is typical of what you do.
Anyway.
You get your hands dirty with this stuff. Go right into it.
Okay. So more fantasy football talk later on today. Big Blue Hits Live at 4 o'clock. Make sure, set your alarms. Tune in. Have Paul Dottino hosting with Roman Oben, and I will make a quick appearance, of course, unless Paul sends me home and I could get to
the gym. I'm not sending you
home. I could get to the gym earlier. I hope everybody has a fantastic afternoon. Stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll have more interviews from Tom Coughlin and the players, again, as they get ready to head out west to take on the San Diego Chargers. Have a great day, everybody.